Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, bringing you more stories about incredible women who share their knowledge and let you in on their amazing experiences, all to help you learn and grow along the way. My special guest today is Margaret Malloy, who is the Global Chief Marketing Officer at Siegel & Gale. Margaret is 15 years. She spent as a marketing and business development leader in top tech, professional services, and marketing firms. She leads an outstanding global team responsible for marketing communications and new business development at Siegel & Gale, one of the world's top branding consultancies. Margaret drives breakthrough marketing that grows company awareness, profit, and team pride. She brings sense and sensibility, a blend of analytics and creative coupled with relentless execution. Margaret, it's such a pleasure to have you on my show today. Welcome.
Hello, Deirdre, and thank you very much for the invitation and the very gracious introduction.
Well, you are so welcome. And, you know, when we first spoke, I was so interested. You had mentioned that you came over to the United States as an immigrant. And I thought it would be just such a great way to start, maybe by you telling us a little bit about your journey.
Certainly. I came to the United States upon graduating college in the mid-1990s. And my first job was working for the Irish government in the capacity of a marketing manager with Enterprise Ireland. My job was to promote the products and services of the country of Ireland to prospective buyers, primarily business buyers, in the United States. Originally, it was established as an internship, meaning a one-year assignment. But from the moment I arrived, I fell in love with New York and have been committed to make that my home and have done so since then.
Oh, that's wonderful. I certainly can relate to falling in love with New York. Was there anything that you found most exciting, maybe a most exciting moment? And perhaps what were some of the pitfalls that you experienced when you first came to the U.S.?
Well, of course, New York is a very special place, so it's an adrenaline run always been being here. For me, it was my first time in America. I had never been outside of Europe at that point in my career, so it was a tremendous departure. In terms of pitfalls, I don't entirely think of challenges in that vocabulary, but I would say that as the eldest of six children coming from rural Ireland, from a very tight-knit community and a very tight-knit family, there is certainly an element of missing your family. The beauty of New York for so many immigrants is that we have a very rich cultural affinity. And often there are wonderful groups from our countries who have paved that journey before us, who are here to welcome us. And that was certainly my experience. Previous Irish people who had arrived in America and who were working in professional settings before I arrived were very welcoming and inclusive.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, having that rich cultural affinity and that community that welcomes you is so important. I can only imagine, because when you talk about a very a rural area, a close-knit community, a close-knit family, coming to New York in and of itself could almost be culture shock, just because there is so much going on. Did you find yourself overly stimulated or just wanting to see and do everything? How did you feel about the lights and kind of big city action?
Honestly, from my perspective, I felt a homecoming. It felt so right.
That's
and I
great.
Think that's less to do with my being Irish and more to do with the culture that is in New York, very much aligned with my interest in professional accomplishment, my can-do attitude, I felt it was very much the right place for me. I would say, however, that when you arrive in a country, as I did, without knowing a single person, with very minimal resources, I came with $200.
Oh my.
It forces you to go out there and forge connections and meet people and tell your story in a compelling way. So while there is the natural tribe there, the folks from the country you've come from, that has value and there's a foundation in that, but when you come with very little money, you have fewer options. So it forces you to be opportunistic from a business perspective. It also forces
right.
you to be curious. So all those factors play into giving you a rich environment that you have to take advantage of. And New York is certainly that, a rich cultural and commercial environment.
Absolutely. So when you came over, if you can remember, what did the American dream mean to you? What did that stand for?
I'm not sure I had the wisdom at the time to even understand that expression, American dream. I don't think I understood it. Perhaps I was a little naive. I came for 1 year as an internship, so I didn't have a long-term plan.
Right, that's true.
You know, but I think, having said that, I've always been very career-oriented. So I recognized very early on that there was so much professional opportunity in New York, and the possibilities were endless. And if you were willing to work, there was a pathway, and that had tremendous appeal to me.
Well, that's so true. If you're willing to get out there and open up your network, you're certainly going to find the people and the opportunities. And, you know, I remember you discussing education. How did education play a big role in shaping who you are today?
I attribute much of my professional and personal success to education. By way of context, it might be interesting in noting that I'm not just a first-generation college graduate or graduate school graduate, but a first-generation high school graduate. So my parents didn't have that economic opportunity, but they did their best to afford it to us, their children. So education was always a vital pathway to a better lifestyle in my family. And it's not unique to me. That's very much the generation that I grew up, the ethos in Ireland. We hold teachers in very high regard. They are among the most esteemed professionals in the Irish community. So teachers have always played a very important role in my career, in my formative years. When I look back over my role models, they were the teachers, because in my community,
oh, that's nice.
Those were the professionals who had access to education. My parents didn't have that. So that laid a really important foundation to me, education at every level. And I subsequently pursued a graduate degree at the Harvard Business School. But that came from that drive that education was a gateway. There were no limits. Your economic circumstance didn't dictate your future. Your capacity, when coupled with education, were the deterministic factors. I look at my parents, super bright people who just did not have that opportunity. And
right.
that perspective, the importance of education, is something that's very much ingrained in the Irish population, particularly of my generation.
Excellent. I really appreciate your perspective on education. I always say for myself that I am the forever student, you know, and I put myself back in the classroom. Even if you're teaching, you're still a student. How on the note of being in the classroom, and, you know, you said you went to Harvard, how do you feel about classroom experience versus getting education online? Because so much of what we're doing today, you know, there's the massive open online courses. Do you like the physical in the classroom, or do you feel people can really learn today through technology as well?
Personally, the instructor-led model of education works very well for my learning style. I enjoy engaging with people. I enjoy the banter that a good teacher can offer in a classroom setting.
Yes.
Having said that, I recognize there are many different learning models. I have two children, and I can see even in my two boys that their learning styles are very different. So for me, what's fundamentally important is the appreciation for the art of learning, the curiosity. Right. The medium is probably as best described as its efficacy is a function of the capacity of the individual to learn and their learning styles. I personally have been fortunate in that I grew up in an era where the classroom model was the predominant one, and it worked well for my style.
Yes, me too. I'm definitely getting used to the technology, but if I can have the experience with people in the same room, I love that. What about, tell us a little bit how you got into marketing and branding.
So marketing has been my chosen profession for the past 20 years. It's a really excellent combination for me personally. I'm naturally a very curious person. I like asking questions. In fact, I'm typically more comfortable in your role today than in this role. So, you're turning the tables on me, which is sort
Great.
Of fun. I'm curious, and I think curiosity is the most important quality of a marketer. The industry forces and understanding consumer behavior, the ability to be at once analytical and creative. That's the blend of skills that lend themselves to be wonderful marketers. You kindly described my perspective in the beginning when you used the term sense and sensibility. I believe that's the capacity I bring to the role of a marketer. And branding in particular requires a blend of analysis and storytelling. So I'm very fortunate to live in a time where marketing is having a golden age, and the skills that I have and my ability to use them are very germane to an era where there's infinite supply of product, infinite communication channels, and yet not infinite great stories. So the ability to take data and tell great stories is at the heart of a marketer, and that's what animates me.
Yeah, definitely that curiosity. I think that's one of the most important characteristics. I agree wholeheartedly. And just the way you put your sense and sensibility together, that is powerful. I'm talking with my special guest, Margaret Malloy, Global Chief Marketing Officer at Siegel & Gale. In the next segment, Margaret will discuss what it takes to be a CMO and the qualities for a leader today.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge, host of Women Worldwide. Welcome back to the show, where Margaret Malloy and I were just chatting about the American dream and her journey to the U.S. from Ireland. So, Margaret, we talked a bit about your background and coming over and the importance of education. And we got a little bit into the marketing and the branding, too. I noticed on LinkedIn you pose a question, what sets me apart? And then you answer the question and you state grace, grit, and gravitas. I love that. Talk a little bit about how you balance those three characteristics.
Thank you, Deirdre. And of course, as a marketer, there's always a little bit of marketing in what we put on our LinkedIn.
Yes, of course.
having fun with that, it is, if you will, our own personal brand and the platform to share it. So I'm quite thoughtful about my choices there. When I say grace, I mean fundamentally having gratitude and respect for others. When I use the term grit, I mean being unstoppable, taking opportunities for granted. And by gravitas, I mean you need a certain amount of substance. And in my case, that's often backed up by work experience or educational credentials. So that's what I mean about the three attributes that set me apart. When you ask about balance, it's such an astute question on your part. And as I reflect on it, I think the goal is to appreciate that it's all very contextual. In one situation, you may lean heavier on your gravitas.
Mm-hmm.
In another situation, it may call for a heavier emphasis on grace and appreciation and respect. And I think that's at the heart of appreciating who you are, an element of self-awareness, and recognizing some strengths can be employed in different situations, but the degree of emphasis varies. What is interesting about how I find my own character is the alignment with my values and those of Siegel and Gale. My employer talks about three values: smart, nice, and unstoppable. So 2 years ago, when I interviewed with my two bosses, we have two CEOs, it was a wonderful fit because I felt the values at Siegel and Gale mirrored what I ascribe to in my own values. And that's so far proven to be a really great fit for me professionally. And that's a joy to be in an environment where your values match those of the firm and your colleagues.
That is wonderful, the way that that happened for you. I think that, you know, it must have been so serendipitous, because we search for, when you're looking for a role in a company, it's more than just a job. You're looking for a home. And when you can align those values and just having what you said with the grace, the grit, and the gravitas, and then they are smart, nice, and unstoppable, well, that kind of is a match made in heaven right there. I think that's wonderful. And you took the CMO role. I'm sure you're super busy every day. If you were just going to discuss the CMO today, what does it take to be a CMO, and what qualities should a CMO possess?
I think the most fundamental quality is curiosity. There is so much change around us. There is so much data. There are so many opportunities, both internally in terms of new products you could bring to market, new competitive offerings. So the first thing is curiosity and the wisdom to know that you don't have all the answers, and yet the capacity to be able to frame the right questions is what sets great CMOs apart from good CMOs. Knowing the right questions, knowing how to take data and drive it into insight, and appreciate that data and insight are not synonymous. The second quality is storytelling. So although there is more information than ever before and more choices in every market, we all still yearn for a story. As consumers or as B2B buyers, the ability to frame a story. And these days, I think of it more as story building than storytelling, because it's not a broadcast medium, which it was 20 years ago when I entered marketing. Marketers, the CMO and the brands, put ideas in market. Consumers contribute to that story, evidenced in social media and in many other settings. So being a story builder is the new version of being a storyteller. And the third aspect is consistent with any C-level role, and that's around leadership, being a good leader, being able to inspire your own internal colleagues, hire and retain wonderful talent, and let those colleagues perform, help them perform to the best of their ability, and also leadership in your market, being a thought leader in your discipline, being active in your industry. To me, those qualities, curiosity, story building, and leadership are fundamental to success as a chief marketing officer.
Those are really great qualities. Going back to something you hit on under curiosity, you know, just knowing those questions, and we don't have all the answers. You know, when you're a leader, you don't have the answers. Do you, Margaret, is it your network on the outside that you rely on, or do you try to surround yourself with the smartest people around you or your team to get those answers? Where do you get the answers from? Where do you look?
When I'm seeking answers, the first thing I do is I think through framing the questions and challenging the underlying assumptions that inform questions. So usually that begins with, as you've identified, developing a wonderful team who are in as many ways as possible different from myself in terms of their core skill set, in terms of how they approach problems, in terms of their background, because your heritage often informs your point of view. Different from myself in thought processes, but similar to myself in values. And that's the fundamental aspect of a great internal team. At Siegel & Gale, colleagues who are smart, nice, and unstoppable in values, but in expertise and discipline that are deviant from mine. So that's in the context of the internal network. Then absolutely, external networks are great sources, whether it's the partner firms that we engage to support our efforts on public relations or any other partner firm, or my peers in the CMO community. I'm very active in organizations like the CMO Club, both as a contributor to thought leadership and as a grateful recipient of the insights of my peers. But it fundamentally comes down to being wise to asking the right questions so you can channel your curiosity and so you can frame responses in a way that's actionable. And thinking through, if I ask a question, what am I going to do with that information? Is it just interesting or is it actionable? Will it make a difference? How do I act on it? And how do I challenge my assumptions at all times? And then the third dimension, which is the whole notion of crowdsourcing, putting a question out on social media, I've quite an active presence there, can lend itself to vastly varying perspectives because that universe is so diverse.
It is so amazing how we can find answers to questions. Just how you laid it out, the three dimensions. It's around us in our teams, and then we go out to our networks, of course, and our associations and other leaders. You said the CMO club that you're in, but now this whole level of take it to the people and to be able to crowdsource and solve problems and then build something better together. That is phenomenal. I really think that looking at it from that standpoint and starting with asking the right questions in the framework is such a great way at looking at how you move forward. And when you mention your network, we all have very large networks, but we tend to find people within a network who mentor and who teach us. Have you had a role model or different mentors throughout your career who still help you today?
I've had a circle of influencers more than an individual mentor. I think in recent years, I find I get wonderful mentorship from my own colleagues who are junior to myself in years. I do a lot of what I call reverse mentoring, where I will look to colleagues who have maybe different experiences or more familiar with certain social media tools who can bring me up to speed fast. I'm finding a lot of utility in that model these days.
Well, I think that the reverse mentoring, I didn't call it that, but I find that I must be doing a lot of reverse mentoring lately. So I'm right there with you. How has technology helped you to connect and manage your global marketing team? Are you using technology to feel closer? Because I know you have team members who are all over the world.
Certainly. I mean, for example, we use Skype for many of our meetings. We use Google Hangouts for our global meeting. And of course, the most pervasive element of technology is mobile. So being available many hours when you're not physically at the office for colleagues in different time zones is so much easier now with mobile technology.
Definitely. Yes, it helps to keep everybody together on the same page, and just knowing that you can either speak or, especially through the Skype, the video, it really helps to keep the team really close. If you could, you know, after this whole discussion, I'm just curious, if you were able to go back and give yourself advice, maybe looking back at your journey when you first came to the U.S., what would you say to yourself?
Two things. The first I would say is treat feedback as a gift. Solicit feedback. Act on feedback. And do not anchor on the negative components of feedback. Don't be defensive. Treat feedback as a gift, first thing. Second thing I would say is develop a competency, a core competency and depth of expertise in one particular area, whether it's marketing or accounting or some dimension of engineering. Pick a competency and go really deep and be the best you can be. So although earlier in our discussion I espoused the importance of values, the grace, the grit, none of this is the end game unless you fundamentally have a core competency that a market values. So you can be a very nice person, but unless you have depth and a skill, you're set an upper limit to your capacity to progress.
Excellent. And what advice would you give to maybe other professionals who were thinking or able to take that leap to C-level or a leadership role in a company? What would you say to them? Best advice?
I would say leadership is the art of making others better by your presence and making your impact endure in your absence. So that's how I think about leadership. And what that means is fundamentally training, engaging people, not always having to have the right answer, but being able to, through questioning and mentoring, help the team, the collective, arrive at the right answer, and then know when to step out of the way, know when your time is up, and not measure your success by the failure of an organization when you exit, but rather the continuity of success. Those qualities of leadership are what separate a wonderful individual contributor from a true C-level leader.
Well, excellent advice, Margaret. I think that you have hit so many important points. We're up to the last question. Where can my listeners find out more about you and Siegel & Gale?
We would invite your listeners to check out SiegelGale.com, follow us on Twitter at SiegelGale, like us on Facebook, and find us on LinkedIn.
Great. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your journey to the United States and your thoughts about the role of CMOs and leaders today. Really appreciate it.
Deirdre, thank you very much, and thank you to your listeners.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'd also like to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. And until we meet again for our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on thesocialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.